It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Another Ebola case in the U.S. An American health worker infected with Ebola is heading back to the United States for treatment at the National Institutes of Health. The patient, who had volunteered to treat Ebola cases in Sierra Leone, is expected to arrive at the NIH facility in Bethesda, Maryland today. The patient's identity was not released. Earlier, a female British Army medic who contracted Ebola while working in Sierra Leone was flown back to Britain, along with two workers who have been in close contact with her. The World Health Organization says more than 10,000 people have died from the Ebola virus outbreak since December 2013, mostly in the West African nations of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. In Somalia, sources report that an apparent U.S. drone strike killed a top leader of the militant group Al-Shabaab. Somali officials and individuals close to Al-Shabaab tell VOA the drone strike hit a vehicle Thursday outside the southwestern town of Barderi. They say the targeted car belonged to Adan Garar, a top official in Al-Shabaab's security service. U.S. officials have not yet confirmed that report. Germany's top diplomat is warning against supplying Ukraine with lethal weaponry in its fight against pro-Russian separatists, saying such a move could trigger a dangerous permanent escalation of the crisis facing Kiev and Moscow. The foreign minister, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, spoke Thursday in Washington after talks with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Iraqi forces and militiamen are tightening their grip on Tikrit in an attempt to take the city from Islamic State militants. Commanders of the offensive say the operation now in week two is advancing gradually. This is VOA News. The top U.S. general in South America is warning about areas of weakness where Islamic State fighters could try to infiltrate the Western Hemisphere. VOA's Carla Babb has details from the Pentagon and General John Kelly's remarks.
There's a lot of people coming and going, and it only takes one to cause you problems.
General John Kelly says about 100 Islamist militant recruits have left the Caribbean and South America to train and fight in Syria.
I would suspect they'll get good at, while they're in Syria, get good at killing and pick up some real job skills in terms of explosives and, you know, beheadings and things like that. And everyone's concerned, of course, if they come home.
Home for this handful of fighters falls in the U.S. geographic sphere of influence. They hail from Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, Suriname, and Venezuela. General Kelly says if the recruits return to their home nations, they could potentially come up through cross-border networks to get to the U.S. Carla Babb, VOA News, the Pentagon.
Pakistan and Afghanistan have announced plans to work together over the next 4 months to try to document about 1 million Afghans who are believed to be living illegally in Pakistani cities. Ayaz Ghul has details.
The protracted Afghan refugee situation in Pakistan has become a major irritant in bilateral relations because Pakistani authorities are increasingly blaming the refugees for a rise in criminal and militant activity in parts of the country. Over the past 3 months, police raids against Afghan-dominated neighborhoods and refugee camps have helped spur an exodus of more than 50,000 Afghans back into Afghanistan. Most of them are said to be undocumented Afghans whom Pakistani authorities consider a security threat. Pakistan wants all registered Afghan refugees to leave by the end of 2015. Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Islamabad.
Tensions are still running high in the midwestern U.S. city of Ferguson, Missouri, after two policemen there were shot Thursday. The attack occurred hours after the city's police chief resigned in the wake of a Justice Department report accusing the police department of racial bias. The incident occurred as protesters gathered outside the Ferguson police station. One officer was shot in the shoulder, the other in the face. John Belmar is a St. Louis County police chief.
Fortunately, with both officers, we don't have any remarkable long-term injuries.
Both policemen are expected to recover. No arrests have yet been made. President Vladimir Putin's spokesman dismissed speculation Thursday the Russian head of state is having health problems. Dmitry Peskov told Echo Muscovy Radio that the 62-year-old president is absolutely healthy. The Russian president has not been seen in public since meeting with Italy's prime minister in Moscow back on March 5th. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's ruling PDP party predicts victory in March 28 elections.
We don't want to be modest. We don't want to be too ambitious. We know we will win the election comfortably, and we are predicting that we'll have 68%.
Olisa Metu is the spokesman for Nigeria's ruling People's Democratic Party. Investors say Nigeria's business benefits may outweigh its challenges. And an alliance of South Sudan opposition political parties says the two warring factions have failed the people. And the chief of the UN mission in the DRC calls for an agreement with the government.
MONUSCO chief Martin Kobler reminded the media the mission's mandate expires at the end of this month. He said there needs to be agreement between the UN Security Council and the DRC government on the mandate for the coming year.
That's correspondent Nick Long in Goma, Eastern DRC. And researchers warn Ebola-affected West African countries could face other serious health challenges after Ebola. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The spokesman for Nigeria's ruling People's Democratic Party says President Goodluck Jonathan does not need the endorsement of non-Nigerians to win the March 28 election. Olisa Metu says there are strong indications in the ongoing campaign that Mr. Jonathan will receive more than 65% of the total votes cast in the presidential poll. Metu's comments came following reports that Morocco recalled its top envoy to Nigeria after the PDP reportedly used King Mohammed VI in its election campaign. Metu tells reporter Peter Clotty that Nigeria's foreign ministry is capable of handling any possible diplomatic row between Abuja and Rabat.
This actually borders on a diplomatic exchange between Nigeria and Morocco. I think it's best left for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to handle. But for us in the ruling party, the People's Democratic Party, we do not believe that there is any need for any rancor, or any disagreement, because actually the Muslims in Nigeria, the Northerners, are very receptive to the president. We do not think that we need any non-Nigerian to campaign for the president in any part of the country. The president is very well accepted by all Nigerians because of the developments that he has done. He has touched all sectors of the economy. He has touched across all the zones and all the tribes and all cadres of people.
There are suggestions in Nigeria that President Jonathan is having problems with the northern vote, and that is playing to the advantage of his main challenger, General Buhari, ahead of the election. What is your reaction to such statements coming from Nigerians?
The truth is that the Northerners know that the president can only rule for 4 years. They have welcomed the president. They are happy with what the president has done amidst the security challenges that we've had and in the face of a global financial downturn. He's been able to achieve a lot, stabilize the economy, and progress it to the extent that Nigeria is a destination choice. Most investors in Africa that want to invest in Africa. So we have done well, by and large, and all Nigerians are happy.
Some opposition critics have said that the PDP, fearing that it will be defeated, is distributing money to buy people's vote ahead of the election. What do you say to such criticisms?
It's an insult to the Nigerian people. It's an insult to the Nigerian voter. How much is enough? How much would they buy someone for a vote? How much would they give him? So talking about buying for vote, I think is a fix in the imagination of a loser. People who have accepted that they will lose this presidential election are coming up with all manners of accusation.
What do you say is the prospect of President Jonathan's campaign ahead of the March 28 presidential election?
Excellent. We don't want to be modest. We don't want to be too ambitious. We know we will win the election comfortably, and we are predicting that we'll have 68%.
Olisa Metu is the spokesman for Nigeria's ruling People's Democratic Party. He was speaking to reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Investors focused on Africa said Nigeria offers huge business opportunities, but also huge challenges. The continent's most populous nation is dogged by a deadly insurgency, what promised to be contentious elections and low oil prices. But some investors say Nigeria's economic picture is fairly promising. View's Anita Powell reports.
Africa's most populous nation has its fair share of issues. The army is battling a Boko Haram insurgency that has rendered parts of its northeast a no-go zone. The nation will hold hotly contested elections at the end of the month, which were delayed 6 weeks due to security concerns. And the economy is still largely dependent on a volatile resource, oil. But even that grim picture cannot compete with the sheer numbers. Nigeria's population is estimated at 170 million people. Its middle class is growing rapidly, and a recent reevaluation of the nation's economy vaulted it above South Africa. In a more meaningful indicator, the World Bank says Nigeria's per capita GDP is steadily rising to its current level of about $3,000. Investment analyst Martin Davis, the CEO of Frontier Advisory, says that makes the West African nation a no-brainer for some investors, particularly those looking at the nation's burgeoning consumer base.
There's been an incredible interest, particularly multinational South African capital, going to Nigeria and largely into the FMCG, fast-moving consumer goods sector. So particularly for consumer-facing enterprises, Nigeria's been almost a no-brainer. 170-odd million people, one in five Africans almost, is Nigerian.
Despite the attractive numbers, doing business in Nigeria is tough for even savvy companies. Upmarket South African retailer Woolworths pulled out of Nigeria in 2013, after just 2 years, citing high rents and flagging sales. Sub-Saharan Africa Managing Director for ratings agency Standard & Poor's, Conrad Royce, says Nigeria still has a double B-minus rating, putting it below the threshold to be considered an investment destination. Royce says the headlines do affect the rating, and the agency is holding its breath as elections approach.
I have to highlight that we have the rating on watch negative at the moment, because of a number of things that are obviously happening in Nigeria.
But Royce says Nigeria also shows promise.
It's a diverse, vibrant economy with very strong, very impressive entrepreneurs in Nigeria.
It is an exciting prospect, investors say, much like this exciting, ever-changing nation. But success in Nigeria may require a virtue that today's fast-moving market is not known for: patience. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The head of the UN mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo has spoken publicly of disagreements and tense relations between the United Nations and the DRC government. The UN mission, known as MONUSCO, is currently sidelined in operations against the Rwandan rebel FDLR. Nick Long has more for VOA from Goma.
MONUSCO chief Martin Kobler reminded the media the mission's mandate expires at the end of this month. He said there needs to be agreement between the UN Security Council and the DRC government on the mandate for the coming year, which will be the 16th year of the mission's existence. MONUSCO is currently costing $1.4 billion a year, and the DRC government, among others, questions whether it is worth the money, as Kobler admitted. As you know, he said, relations between MONUSCO and the government and the President of the Republic are difficult at the moment. It is quite tense. He said there are two points of divergence between the United Nations and the DRC government, one over MONUSCO's troop numbers and the other over how to protect human rights. We are blocked as regards supporting operations against the FDLR, said Kobler, because of human rights questions concerning two generals nominated to lead that operation. The Congolese army's offensive against FDLR rebels went ahead last month and is continuing without MONUSCO because the mission said it could not collaborate with the two Congolese generals in charge who were accused of large-scale human rights abuses. But in his Wednesday briefing, Kobler also said the United Nations and the government share a commitment to protecting human rights and the disagreement is over how they should be protected. He called for a confidence pact between the United Nations and the government. He suggested a solution could take the form of a permanent dialogue with the government over contentious issues. In response, DRC government spokesman Lambert Mende said officials have been asking for a confidence pact with MONUSCO. It was because MONUSCO was not equally ready for such a pact, he suggested, that the disagreements had arisen. As for the allegations against the two generals, Mende rejected them and said MONUSCO had been collaborating with those generals for 4 years. An independent Congo analyst, Timo Muller, told VOA other issues have also hindered MONUSCO's collaboration with the government, including Kobler's involvement in political meetings last December.
Martin Kobler, the chief of MONUSCO, joined foreign diplomats in convening roundtables for the Congolese opposition, and as a result of which the government publicly reprimanded Martin Kobler for what they believe is an interference in sovereign matters.
Meanwhile, it's reported the FDLR rebels are retreating into forests to avoid the army offensive, although some have been captured. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 13th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, and Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. An alliance of opposition political parties in South Sudan say the leaders of the country's two warring parties have failed the people by their inability to bring peace. As Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba, the alliance says President Salva Kiir and his former vice president Riek Machar should work harder to bring peace to South Sudan.
At a news conference in Juba, the opposition alliance presented its position in a three-page document signed by representatives of 18 political parties. The alliance says President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar's self-interest led to the failure of the peace talks in Addis Ababa last week. Martin Aligo is a representative in the alliance.
We call upon all stakeholders in the country to rise up to the challenge facing our beleaguered country. It is only us who will save our people. Let us lead our serious and create homegrown solutions rather than allow a country to be held hostage by potential interests.
But Aligo did not specify what those homegrown solutions should be. Aligo says the 15-month-long conflict has led to deteriorating humanitarian conditions that have displaced about 100,000 people who continue to stay in UN-run camps and tens of thousands of others who fled the country during the violence.
We would like to caution the warring parties that while they are engaged in a dangerous brinkship, our country is in the grips of war that threatens to destroy it by real threat of external intervention.
The alliance says a UN trusteeship is being floated for the first time for an independent country because of the failure of the two sides to reach a peace deal. It says to avoid this scenario, all South Sudanese must pressure the warring parties to put the country above their personal interests and give peace a chance. Lam Akol, the head of the opposition alliance, says the leaders of the two warring parties cannot lead an interim government.
We actually say that when you say that they can lead the interim period, we are saying now no, they cannot, because they have proved that they are not to the level expected by the people of South Sudan.
Michael Makwe-Luet, the South Sudan Minister of Information, had this to say in response to Akol's comments.
That is their opinion, and we respect their opinion, but that is not true. The government and the rebels are trying their level best to bring peace, and because we are not looking for a hasty peace. We are not looking for a fragile peace that will just be signed and tomorrow it crumbles. We are looking for a just, durable and lasting peace that will not take us back to war.
The peace talks were adjourned last week after the two sides failed to reach a deal by IGAD's deadline on Thursday. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Lawmakers from the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Party, led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, stormed out of Parliament yesterday after the acting speaker blocked the introduction of a motion to discuss the alleged abduction of Occupy Africa Unity Square leader and pro-democracy activist Itaya Zamara early this week. Erwin Chifera has the details from Harare.
Zamara! Mokopa lawmaker Amos Chibaya attracted the ire of the acting speaker when he led his colleagues in singing a song denouncing the system after Maruma Oko refused to give Chamisa's motion the nod. He was ejected from the house shortly afterwards, and members of his party stormed out in protest. Chamisa said Zamara's disappearance was an issue of national concern, hence his motion. He said he was disappointed by the speaker's decision to postpone the motion to next Tuesday. Earlier, Maruma Oko had said the matter had been adequately answered yesterday when Justice Minister and Deputy President Emmerson Mnangagwa said Zamara's abductors would be brought to book. Mnangagwa was responding to questions from lawmakers.
That issue has not been acknowledged by the speaker because they are trying to find excuses. And this is why we have said we cannot be in parliament, you know, because it's allowed by our standing orders in the constitution for us to raise any matter we feel is of importance. And this is why MPs felt that this operation is unacceptable.
Chamisa said parliament cannot conduct business as usual when Zamara has not been accounted for.
It will still be an urgent matter to the extent that Zamara has not been found. And parliament cannot be business as usual if Zamara is not yet accounted for.
MDCT Chief Whip Innocent Gonese addressed his colleagues after the walkout. He said given past cases of political violence where activists were abducted and found dead later, Zamara's case was of national importance and should be discussed in parliament.
This obviously major which touches on very fundamental issues, looking at issues of human security. From the first time, we all know we've lost comrades, we've disappeared in a similar manner. And later on, their bodies were found.
Zamara was abducted by suspected state security agents on Monday, and there's been no word about his whereabouts since. Police spokeswoman Cherit Charamba says the police are investigating Zamara's alleged kidnapping, but she did not have any fresh information today. Pressure has been mounting on Harare to find Zamara or to release him if he's being held by state security agents. The civil society has also been calling for his immediate release. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
When the Ebola outbreak finally ends in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, those countries could continue to face serious health problems. Researchers say Ebola has disrupted healthcare systems, causing a significant decrease in vaccinations for measles and other childhood diseases. VOA's Jordi Kapua reports.
Dr. Justin Lessler says healthcare systems took a beating during the Ebola crisis, with about 75% of services being disrupted.
The healthcare systems there were somewhat weak to begin with, and during the Ebola crisis, many healthcare centers closed, and there's evidence that less people were coming to those facilities that were opened. I think that while we're getting a better picture now of what the situation is, there's still a lot of uncertainty remaining because it's a very dynamic situation.
Lessler is an assistant professor in the Department of Epidemiology at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. In the journal Science, he and his colleagues warn of the secondary effects of Ebola in West Africa.
There's a lot of other diseases that we depend on the healthcare system to help us either prevent or treat. So our particular focus was on measles because it's one of the diseases that's most sensitive to reductions in rates of vaccination for children. Those reductions in vaccination both increase the risk of a measles outbreak and increase the impact of such an outbreak were it to occur.
The World Health Organization says in 2013, measles was blamed for more than 145,000 deaths worldwide, mostly young children. In 1980, before widespread vaccinations, there were more than 2.5 million deaths from measles every year. After a slow start, the international community rushed in money and resources to stop the spread of Ebola. It might appear that such input would rebuild the healthcare systems.
I don't think that would be a safe assumption because the resources that were poured into the regions were very focused on Ebola themselves. And the countries themselves are still on the front line of all the responses.
Asked how long it would take for healthcare systems in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone to recover, Lessler says,
that's a little bit hard to say, and I'm not necessarily comfortable in making a projection overall.
Lessler says the primary recommendation is to launch a campaign to increase childhood vaccination rates. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sponsoring here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with football. Mali and Ghana each came from behind to beat South Africa and Zambia 2-1 respectively in the Group B matches at the Africa Under-20 Championships in Mboa, Senegal on Thursday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Nigeria play Ivory Coast as Senegal face Republic of Congo. On Sunday, South Africa play Zambia and Ghana engage Mali. In Switzerland, Mauritania and Rwanda are jointly Africa's most improved teams as Zimbabwe slip by the widest margin in FIFA rankings released in Zurich on Thursday. Ranked 18th, Algeria are the highest placed Africans. African champions Ivory Coast is 20th, Ghana 24th, Tunisia 25th, Senegal 36th, Cape Verde Islands 38th, Nigeria 41st, Guinea 44th, the Democratic Republic of Congo 47th, and Cameroon 49th. Still in Zurich, Zimbabwe is dismissed from the 2018 World Cup qualifiers FIFA announced in Zurich on Thursday. FIFA say the sanction follows Zimbabwe Football Association's refusal to settle the debts they owe coach Jose Claudine Giorgini since 2012. Meanwhile, Madagascar play South Africa, Djibouti face Morocco, as Tanzania host Egypt, Mali play Senegal, and Mauritius face Ivory Coast in Africa Beach Soccer qualifiers today, Friday. On Sunday, Uganda host Ghana. In cricket, South Africa beat the United Arab Emirates by 146 runs at the ICC Cricket World Cup in Wellington, New Zealand on Thursday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Zimbabwe play India in Auckland. In volleyball, Mozambique's Autoridad beat Burkina Faso's Douanes by 3-1. Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel outplayed Morocco's Itihad Tangier 3-0 as Cape Verde Islands Atletico beat Sudan's Daima Hamad 3-1 in Group A at the Africa Men's Club Volleyball Championships in Sousse, Tunisia on Thursday. Tunisian defending champions Esperance beat Morocco's FAR 3-1. Libya's Sueli outplayed Sudan's Al Nahda 3-0 as Egypt's Zamalek beat Cameroon's FAP 3-1 in Group B. In Group C, Algeria's Bourage Buririge, Rwanda's APR, and Kenya's GSU dismissed Egypt's El Ahly, the Democratic Republic of Congo's SPR, and Uganda's Nemo Stars in straight sets, respectively. In Group D, Algeria's Setif beat Libya's El Ahly Benghazi 3-1, as Egypt's Somoha and Kenya Prisons dismissed Uganda's Kampala Volleyball Club and Zimbabwe's Support United in straight sets, respectively. Finally, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Senegal, and Togo, and hosts Nigeria, are vying to win the three-day inaugural Lagos International Junior Open Golf Tournament starting today, Friday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, March 13th.
Hello. Good morning. This is not so calling for Peace on the channel. I just want to thank the entire VOA Africa team for helping us with the authorities, the dollar messages, actually are trying to get to zero cases. I want to thank also the CDC in their healthcare and coordinating programs and giving us authoritative Ebola advice on how to avoid Ebola. Together, we can get to zero. Thank you once more. This is not so calling for Peace on the channel.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. An American health worker infected with Ebola is headed back to the United States for treatment at the National Institutes of Health. The agency said the patient, who had volunteered to treat Ebola patients in Sierra Leone, is expected to arrive at the NIH facility in Bethesda, Maryland on Friday. The worker will stay in a secure treatment center, one of a handful of units in the United States designed to treat the most dangerous pathogens. NIH officials have not released any information about the identity of the patient. And VOA sources in Somalia are reporting that an apparent U.S. drone strike has killed a top official of the militant group Al-Shabaab. That's it for this Friday, March 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, and our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm James Battison. Have a lovely weekend.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, land reform. Despite the end of colonial rule and apartheid, vast amounts of land in Zimbabwe and South Africa and other regions on the continent are not being redistributed fairly and efficiently. We'll discuss this issue next time on VOA Africa.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing the internet. This light-hearted show discusses topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.